वथे वासुदेवाया ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 2, Text Number 12. Lokam Pradashaya Surittama Tavakam Me Yatratya Itam Urasa Avyaho Apurvo Asmadvidasya Unnayano Vibharti Bahu Adbhutam Sarasa Rasa Sudha Adi Vaktre Lokam Pradashaya Surittam Tavakam Me Yatratya Ittam Urusavayava Vapurvo Asmad Vidasya Mana Unayano Bibharti Bhavadbhutam sarasara sasudha divaktre Lokam pradarshaya surattava kama me Lokam pradarshaya surattama tava kama me Yatratya ittam urusavaya va Papurvo Asmad Vidasya Mana Unayano Bibharti Vavad Bhutam Sarasaras Asudadi Vaktre Lokam Pradarshaya Surattama Tavakam Me Yatratya Ittam Urusavaya Vava Purvo Asmad Vedasya Manavana Yano Bibharti Bhavad Bhutam Sarasaras Asudha Divaktre His chant.
accent a little bit. Ladies. Lokam, residential palace. Pradashaya, please show. Surattama, O best of friends. Tavakam, your. May, unto me. Yatratya, a person born wherein. Itam, like this. Urasa, by the chest. Avyavo, two limbs, breasts. Apurvo, wonderful. Asmat vidasya, of a person like me. Mana unayano, very agitating to the mind. Bibarti, sustains. Bahu, many. Adbhutam, wonderful. Sarasa, sweet words. Rasa, amorous gestures like smiling. Sudha adi, such as nectar. Vaktre, in the mouth. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O best friend, will you kindly show me the place where you reside? I cannot imagine how the residents of that place have gotten such wonderful bodily features as your raised breasts, which agitate the mind and eyes of a person like me who sees them. Judging by the sweet speech and kind smiles of those residents, I think that their mouths must contain nectar. Please repeat, O best friend, will you kindly show me the place where you reside? I cannot imagine how the residents of that place have gotten such wonderful bodily features as your raised breasts, which agitate the mind and eyes of a person like me who sees them. Judging by the sweet speech and kind smiles of those residents, I think that their mouths must contain nectar. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. Still bewildered, Agnidra wanted to see the place from which the Brahmin boy had come. Of course, this is not a boy, this is a girl. But in his present agitated state, he's calling her a boy. just for those who haven't been here over the past few days. Agnidra wanted to see the place from which the Brahmin boy had come, where the men had such raised breasts, such attractive features, he thought, must be due to the severe austerities performed there. Agnidra addressed the girl as Suratama, the best friend, so that she would not refuse to take him there. Not only was Agnidra captivated by the girl's raised breasts, he was also attracted by her sweet speech. Nectar seemed to emanate from her mouth, and therefore he was increasingly surprised. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shilakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri kunave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Just to recap for a few moments on this particular situation, here we have King Agnidra, and he's gone to the Mundara Mountain, which is a very beautiful area where many people go to perform. When I say people, I mean people who want to just perform austerities and penances. They go there, and it's supposed to be a very nice place to do that. One of the great villains of the Bhagavatam, namely Hiranyakasipu, he performed his penance at Mount Mandara and achieved enormous amount of material powers. And here we have King Agnidra, and he is not going there for some spiritual purpose. He has gone there primarily to find or to obtain a wife, and also to obtain a son through that wife, and for him ultimately to go to the planet of the Prajapatis, or the fathers, the sons of Lord Brahma. So that is not a very lofty goal. That's not a very high goal. There are much higher goals than that. Nonetheless, we see that he wants to achieve this particular material desire, and it is known, especially in India, that it is not enough merely to wish for or even pray for, but one should do something to show the Supreme Lord that one is, in effect, worthy of that which he or she is asking for. This idea also prevails on the spiritual platform as well as the material platform. In other words, devotees will put themselves through great austerities only to show the Lord that they're willing to endure, they're willing to bear, they're willing to sustain great difficulties, trials, tribulations, only so that the Lord will manifest in their heart in such a way that they will be able to communicate with the Lord, even see the Lord, so that that relationship with the Lord may become tighter and tighter as time goes by. In the case of materialists, they also perform austerities, but they do so generally to increase their material pleasures. Now, the difference between one who is performing austerities for spiritual purposes and one who is performing them for material purposes is that the effect is quite different. One who is performing them for spiritual purposes is doing this to please Krishna, and quite often, in the course of performing austerities, one receives from Krishna reciprocation in the form of transcendental bliss, in the form of transcendental peace, in the form of transcendental strength and knowledge, which enables him to sustain his position. And he can go on even without having all of the pleasures that he normally would obtain had he been in his normal environment. What are some of the austerities that are performed in these wooded or forested or mountainous areas? Well, sometimes they don't eat at all for many days, or they may just live on leaves, or just live on berries, or on some flowers, or they may stand on their one leg for long periods of time, bathe in ice-cold water 3, 4, 5 times a day, sometimes stand in the blazing hot sun hour after hour. This is not very easy. And for a person who is not experiencing transcendental bliss during such a period, it probably almost will make him go crazy. And we sometimes have this, even in our own ISKCON society. Sometimes a devotee joins, and he's quite new. He may be here 3 or 4 or 5 months, and he heard that Haridas Thakur was chanting all day and all night, and chanting over 100 rounds. And he thinks that, well, I'm a human being, and Haridas Thakur is a human being, so what's the difference? I've got the determination, I've got the will, I got the ability to stick to it, I'll do it. Yes, I'm going to chant 64 rounds every day, and I'm going to do it in a solitary place. You see, solitary, but he makes sure that everybody sees him when he's doing it in this solitary place, because the motive is not always for spiritual advancement. The motive is often for egotistical advancement. The ego is like a big balloon that we carry around on us. And as you know, a balloon, you continue to blow it up, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's the nature of the ego. The more you desire to be admired, to be looked up to be glorified, to be honored, the more you want that, well, the more the balloon gets bigger and bigger. And the greater our attachment to the material world becomes. So the process in spiritual life, as Savas was mentioning yesterday, there is Pravritti Marg and there is Nirvritti Marg. In Pravritti Marg, there is the path of sense enjoyment, and in Nirvritti Marg, there's the path of renunciation. In renunciation, one attempts or tries to slowly collapse the balloon of ego, so that ultimately there is no false ego anymore, and all that remains is the true ego, which is the soul in relation to the supreme soul. So this is a very important principle, that performing austerities for simply material benefit, one may be able, one may sustain the difficulties, the tribulation of simply doing these particular disciplines. But there's a psychological effect. Now, as I was mentioning just a few minutes ago, sometimes devotees will try to chant 64 rounds or 80 rounds, and they may succeed in doing this. But quite often we have found that persons may do this for 1 month, for 2 months, for 3 months, and then we don't see them anymore. And what happens is that they return to the material world with a vengeance, so to speak. And by that I mean, for months they have not had any connection with sense pleasure. The tongue has hardly gotten any pleasure. The ears have not gotten any pleasure. The nose have not been even smelling the flowers. The tongue has not been tasting delicious foods. The genitals are not having their play. So what happens is that because we all desire inherently pleasure, because we have come from pleasure, that's our real nature. When we don't get pleasure and we keep it away from us for a long period of time, what happens is we build up a desire for pleasure. It's very much like a spring. You know, a bed spring? So if you push the spring down and you hold it there, as long as you hold it there, it will remain there. But if your arm begins to slacken in its strength and you begin to let up, or you let up suddenly, the spring will bounce up and it may hit the ceiling. Well, that is the same thing that happens to a person who's been holding down the spring of all his appetites. And the result is that after 3 months or 4 months, because he is not experiencing a higher taste, the result is that he's full of desire. It's like going on a crash diet for a month or 2 months, and after 2 months or so, you've lost the weight, and everyone is complimenting you. Everyone is saying, you look gorgeous, you look wonderful, I've never seen you so wonderful. Then you say, well, you know, maybe I'll just take a little chocolate today, or take a cookie today. I mean, one cookie, look at me, I'm looking beautiful. So, how could I be hurt? So we take one cookie, Well, that one cookie, okay. Next day, take a cookie again. You know, it wouldn't really hurt if I took two cookies. I've lost all the weight. And then third day, it's not two cookies, but it's 10 cookies. And then the fourth day, you're making up for the last lost time of 2 months. You've got 20 cookies in you. So why is that? Because the soul by nature is blissful. And if it's not receiving inner bliss from association with Krishna, then it needs to go outside to compensate for the lack of real bliss, and it tries to get it in artificial bliss, which we call sense pleasure. So the person tries to make up for lost time. He's been sensorially starved. Like a person who's starving. After you're starving, you just fill, because you've lost so much weight in your skin and bones. Similarly, psychologically, when we have been deprived of all the pleasure that we normally have, then what happens is we make up for lost time and keep stuffing. And then after a week or two of that, the person who's been on a diet is back to the same weight he or she was at before the diet. So those things generally don't last for a long time. They last for a short time. Generally, persons like to get ready for the summer because they're going to be in a swimsuit and they've got to be on the beach. So they want to make a nice impression in the winter time. They can cover it all up, and it doesn't matter if they've got 15 or 20 or 30 pounds extra, because nobody's seeing it if you wear nice loose clothing. So the important point is that, as it is mentioned, in the Bhagavad Gita, the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one is fixed in Krishna in consciousness. So this is the important point. If we deny ourselves to such a strong degree, there's going to be a psychological reaction. We should always remember this. That is why the principle of moderation or control is most important. Not, as Krishna mentions, it is not possible to practice yoga if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or doesn't sleep enough. But one who restrains, one doesn't sleep enough, but one who is able to restrain his senses in a moderate and controlled fashion, he can become, or she can become, a free from miseries through this yoga system. And the yoga system I'm referring to now is the bhakti yoga system. So that is the all-important point, is that we should not go to extremes, because if we do go to extremes, when we get the psychological reaction, we may not be able to handle that reaction. And the result of not being able to handle a reaction is that we may not be able to pursue spiritual life any further. We may feel that I can't take this anymore, it's too dull, it's too dry, it's empty, who needs this? And this happens. I've seen this happen to persons who are sannyasis, who've been for many years, who are spiritual masters. They went off on the deep end, so to speak, and then what happens is they fell down into some sense gratification due to the fact that they were going beyond their ability. Yes, a certain amount of austerity is good. That's why we have the Ekadasis, and you can practice it on any one of three levels. One can fast completely everyone has to fast from beans and grains, but one can fast from all food for a half a day, or one may fast up until 6 o'clock in the evening, or one may fast for a complete 24 hours. Some people do that, and they even stay up and they chant Hare Krishna. We don't do this because it's rather extreme. And unless you are already highly spiritually advanced, there will be some psychological reaction. And we don't want a reaction which is going to interfere with or impede or encroach upon our regular spiritual duties. What is the value if you're a cook and you're cooking and you're thinking all the time of this handsome man or this beautiful girl because of the tremendous psychological restriction that you have given yourself? For example, you're not eating for 3 days. So you're feeling inconvenience, and the mind starts to do tricks on us. And we'll start to imagine this thing and that thing. We'll begin to remember the pleasures of the past. All this can be avoided by being moderate in our sense pleasure. A certain amount is necessary, as I said, but certain pleasures, of course, as we know, must be given up totally, unless, of course, one is in the married situation, such as sexual gratification. This is, of course, the most attracting and the most attaching form of sense pleasure that there is. But marriage is a concession for a person who feels it's necessary. And for certain persons, it is necessary, and no one should be condemned or looked down upon, because Krishna himself says that I am sex life within restriction, with regulation. So, however, the point is this, is that that's not enough. One may engage in sexual activity, but at the same time, he also engages in many spiritual activities. So with the spiritual activities, he purifies his mind, purifies his feelings, purifies his speech, purifies his intelligence, purifies. So all of these become purified. And the covering which is around the soul, this is a covering of ignorance. Ignorance, what ignorance? The ignorance of thinking that the more I can enjoy of this world, the happier I will be. That's ignorance. So people are running here and there and everywhere in order to enjoy, but instead of enjoyment, yes, they get a moment of enjoyment, but it's followed by lots of pain, lots of suffering, lots of trial and tribulation. For every pound of pleasure we get, there'll be a pound of pain. They equal each other. But an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures of the senses have a beginning and an end, and the wise person does not delight in them. Doesn't delight in them because why? He wants permanent pleasure. He wants ongoing pleasure. He wants non-stop pleasure. How do you get that? Only through the process of associating with the Supreme Lord. So let's backtrack a little bit. Why do we want pleasure in the first place? That's not abnormal. It is the nature of every being to desire pleasure. Generally, most beings are desiring pleasure on a material level because they don't know anything about spiritual pleasure. They've never tasted it. They don't even know anything about it. They don't know there's an alternative. So it's only natural for persons to gravitate towards different areas or different avenues of pleasure. That's natural. In our original constitutional position, when we were once with Krishna in the spiritual world, and we were serving Krishna, and we were glorifying him, adoring him, working for him, working in the sense of everything they do, as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give up, everything you do for me. When we were living in that mentality, that means our mind was continuously associating with Krishna. And when the mind associates with Krishna, Krishna being all blissful, all peaceful, all loving, the mind in association with the Supreme Lord receives that same quality and reflects that same quality. Sometimes devotees, when they are so full of transcendental bliss, people notice that they look so happy, so fulfilled, so satisfied, that they're radiating. Sometimes I see Svavas at Ratha Yatra time, and because he's so involved in presenting this incredible festival of bringing the Lord to the people. And the Lord reciprocates in the heart in the form of endless smiles, endless giggles, endless joy, endless dancing, clapping. There's that's just a desire to express oneself or express the joy that is bubbling in the heart. It comes, and a person who is Krishna conscious will express, you can't miss it. Whenever he sees a person, he smiles. Why does he smile? Is that some kind of affectation like a movie star does? He comes and he puts on that big Hollywood smile. No, it's not that at all, and there's quite a difference between Hollywood smiling and Krishna conscious smiling. The Hollywood smile is like an affectation. It's like you go to acting school and you learn how to smile and raise your lips and get your teeth shining and make sure that you got the whitener on it so that you actually beam. This is not the smiling we're talking about. The smiling I'm talking about is Krishna conscious smile, which comes from the heart and it flows up and it makes the eyes twinkle and it makes the mouth widen and it makes the cheeks become flushed. It is very beautiful, actually, to behold, because such a person is feeling a connection with, a relationship with, a togetherness, or at one-ment with the Supreme Lord. And the Lord, in effect, is taking over that person's body and reflecting Himself through that person. And that's why we like to be around such people, because inherently, or originally, or basically, we want to be with the Lord. This is our desire. And that's why we love to be around Srila Prabhupada. When Prabhupada would come, there would be hundreds of persons at the airport to just get a look at him, or to get a chance to touch him, or to put a garland on him, or watch him smile. It was so delicious and delightful. I remember at LAX airport, Prabhupada coming in. The scream, the people in the airport, they thought that some big rock star had come in, like Elvis had come. The devotees were screaming and roaring and yelling and shouting, Prabhupada! I mean, it was amazing. It was wonderful. And Prabhupada even he was almost laughing, but he was trying to restrain himself. And he had so many garlands all over him, all you could see is his nose. So he had to keep taking the garlands off. And he would just, which is the greatness of the spiritual master. He doesn't want to just keep it for himself. You know, now I smell one girl. Now I got another one to smell. No. He keeps giving away. That is the nature of the capacious heart of the spiritual master. So, therefore, we have a very wonderful example in Srila Prabhupada who has given us so very much and so many wonderful instructions. So the important point is this, is that as Krishna says, whatever you offer me in love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So we don't have to be performing austerities to such a strong degree that which is beyond our ability to create psychological distress or problems. I was saying just a few moments ago, why do we want pleasure? What is the reason for that? Well, as I said, in our original position, we were always blissful. But somewhere along the line, we chose to want to experience, to some degree, what Krishna was experiencing. What does it feel like to be glorified? What does it feel like to be honored? What does it feel like to have people bow before your feet? What does it feel like to have people sing songs to you or about you? What is this wonderful feel? In other words, the servant only knows what it feels like to serve, but he doesn't know what it's like to feel like a master. So he has to become a master in order to know what it feels like to be a master. So he chooses because he has independence. He has small independence, and he chooses to desire to enjoy in a similar way as Krishna is enjoying. He wants to enjoy, he wants proprietorship, and he also wants to be a friend of all. So you cannot do that in the eternal world. You have to come up to this world to do that. And when that occurs, what happens is that the soul is put out of conscious connection with the Supreme Soul. And the result is that we no longer feel the transcendental bliss that we felt when we were in touch with or in communion with Krishna. Consequently, we feel like we're deserted. We feel forlorn. We feel empty. And the way we try to fill up that void of emptiness is by stuffing the senses with pleasure. But the rub of that is that the more pleasure you have, the more pain you have. So the material world is like going around and around in a circle. You go, half the circle is pleasure, the other half of the circle is pain. Pleasure and pain, pleasure and pain. And the result of that pleasure and pain is that one becomes ultimately frustrated, disappointed, dejected, depressed. And then one has to take these tranquilizers, or these uppers, or downers, or equalizers, or anything they can to not have to feel the depression. It is said now that there's a big, you know, recession going on now. In fact, for some, it's a depression. They've lost their homes. They've lost their jobs. People who are making $100,000 a year. So how do you deal with this? Well, the big one business that has gone up 17% is the movie business. Because it's wonderful for escaping. You can watch some comedy, or you can look at this handsome man or this beautiful girl, and you can imagine, you can live in a fantasy world for 2 hours at the cost of $11. And then And if you can, maybe if you've got some smarts, you may sneak into the next of the, you know, you're in a multiplex, so you go into the other theater to get a little bit more escapism. Some people stay there all day just so that they don't have to go home and face the harsh reality of the fact that I'm a loser. Yeah. This is the biggest fear that people have in this world, to be a loser. Actually, for devotees, there's no such thing as a loser. To put it another way, the only losers there are those who are turning their back or looking away from or ignoring or neglecting their true interest, which is to love Krishna, to serve Krishna, to adore Krishna. So that is the whole point of Krishna consciousness, is to take us back to that original bliss, that original peace, that original strength, that original freedom that we had in the spiritual world. And so that we do not have all of the accompanying anxieties and uncertainties and doubts and confusions and depressions which come from that particular ignorance that I spoke of. I said the soul is enfolded with ignorance, desire to enjoy the material world, which leads to pleasure, forgetfulness that we are a living entity, an eternal soul. We forget that. We think we are the body. This is all ignorance. The idea that if somehow I express my anger over my frustration, that will benefit me. This is ignorance. What it does is reinforce our condition of illusion. In other words, if I get angry over something that I think I need, but I really don't need it, then I'm reinforcing the illusion that I do need it. And last but not least, to sustain the illusion that death ends everything, which is another illusion. So therefore, let me enjoy like anything as fast as I can, as much as I can, because who knows, I may die tomorrow. So this is the thick crust of ignorance that surrounds the soul, which manifests in the form of lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, madness, sloth, gluttony. All of these troubles that I've just mentioned, they impact upon the living entity, and they result in more and more misery. And people are looking for external fixes. You know, you get a little cough, so you have to take cough medicine. You take this. Most of these common disorders that we have, you pick up a cold, you don't have to go running to the doctor. And I'm not saying that for serious situations you should not do that. You should. You should take medical advice. But for many of these small things, you know, I see people running to the doctor and taking all kinds of medications for which are creating new problems in their bodies. And not only that, but quite often these medications are proved to be not just useless, but harmful by the very agency that approved them. So this is quite unfortunate, you see. So we should try to keep drugs away from our body, legal or illegal, as much as possible. So the all-important point is that Srila Prabhupada has brought this incredibly great philosophy to the Western world, hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshiping the Lord, praying to the Lord, having a practical service to the Lord, having a friendly association, a feeling that the Lord is my best friend and is here to help me, to have that faith that Krishna does. Once you surrender, Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So what is the reward? The reward is that Krishna takes up His interest becomes your life, and he gives us what we need, and he protects what we have, and in such a way, he makes sure that our path becomes quite smooth. To sum up, I'd like to mention one very important point. Sometimes a devotee is going along, and actually he's very peaceful, and he's very blissful, and very happy in his service, but he suddenly feels a great dryness. He's not feeling any bliss, not feeling any peace, not feeling any real happiness, that doesn't even want to go to the programs. This is a very interesting test that Krishna puts us all to. It's called, some people call it the dark night of the soul. It's dark in the sense that you feel very alone. You don't feel your relationship with Krishna. You don't feel your connection with devotees. You just feel deserted, forlorn, alone. Krishna doesn't really want me anymore. Maybe I should leave God, leave spiritual life. If and when that comes, that is our test. Do we love Krishna for the pleasure, the inner pleasure that He gives us? Or will we love Him whether He gives us pleasure or not? The great devotee will go on whether he is whipped, badgered, pummeled, whether he is feeling any and all kinds of difficulties. He will go on with his service and is ready to die in difficulty or trouble or trial, no matter what, because he knows one important thing. There is no one greater, no one better, no one higher, no one bigger, no one more interested in me and in the world than Krishna. And no matter what Krishna does to me, I will persist, I will continue, I will stick, I will stay, and I will continue to serve Him no matter what He gives me. If I can remember that very beautiful way that Srimati Radharani, she put this, I don't mind my personal distress, I only wish for the happiness of Krishna, for His happiness is the goal of my life. However, if He gives me great distress, then that distress is the best of my happiness. That's the essence of this philosophy. Whatever Krishna gives us, good, bad, or indifferent, that's not important. What is important is what are we giving to Krishna? What are we offering to Krishna? How are we showing our love to Krishna? Are we showing our appreciation and gratitude to Krishna, even if we're in great difficulty? If we can do that, we have passed the test and we will be brought and raised. The interesting thing about that, and some of us have already been through this dark night, when you come out of it, the reward of going through that, sustaining it, being steady in it, and trying our best to maintain our spiritual life, notwithstanding all those different tribulations, the result is that Krishna then doubles and triples and quadruples the bliss, the peace, the happiness, the strength, the knowledge, the realizations. They come flooding into the soul, and one actually realizes how wonderful it is to continue to stay, because Krishna was always watching. It may have appeared that he wasn't, but he was always watching, always testing, and ultimately giving us the reward that he always wants to give us, and that is himself. And if we have Krishna himself, then we have everything. And if you have that everything, there is nothing more needed. We will always be happy, always be fulfilled, always be satisfied, always be uplifted, and always be looking to share and to help those who are in need and who are in danger. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Are there any questions or any comments anyone would like to make, please? Yes, Prabhupada.
Well, that's like a short comment. I really appreciate your class. Yesterday, I made time about helping each other in our struggle against minds, because that topic is not specifically your class. Someone always asked why I made that comment.
Dear friend is a very nice devotee who recently had a, you know, what we would consider a major fall down. And in my opinion, his community handled it very poorly, sort of ran him off. And
a little louder, please.
And, you know, he's, you know, to him, even though now they realize their error and they want him back and they feel like, wow, what a major loss. Why did we act that way? We, you know, when any one of us are equally susceptible to the same situation. This devotee was very fired up, following the whole program, reading, hearing, chanting, mm-hmm. doing excellent service. But was really struggling with lust, really struggling, and felt too ashamed to approach anyone, didn't have anyone to trust, and at the same time, no one was, you know, noticing this, and nobody was reaching out to help this person. Mm. So anyways, this happened. And I feel like it could happen to any one of us,
yeah.
especially in a situation where we felt isolated, like you were saying, felt like we had no one to go to. Maybe even when you're starting to feel dryness in our service, going through, you know, some type of parallel to dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's our duty to help each other and give each other Krishna conscious association. And it's also our duty that if we're in a difficult situation, we have to have friendships. We have to have people we can trust and confide in mm-hmm. to go to run to if we're being attacked by lust or any one of, you know, the pitfalls in spiritual life.
Yes. Yes, and one also should be humble enough to be able to go to somebody. Sometimes a person is so proud and so arrogant that he's been flaunting himself around as the great tapasya, thinking that he could never fall down, and now that he is falling or has already fallen, he doesn't want to admit this to anybody, and so that he just leaves. And Prabhupada would always say, no, he should come back, and continue his devotional service, and we should all welcome him and not look down at him. Very important point. So support groups are very, very useful, but the support should be really, there should be a feeling of that we don't care if he has this difficulty. We don't judge this person. We know that it's wrong, but we don't care. We accept him equally, just as we did before he even fell down. So when a person feels welcome, this is what real love is. Like a mother, she loves her baby. The baby throws mud in her face. She still loves him. The baby kisses the mother. She doesn't love her any more or less. Similarly, real love means, just as Krishna loves us, we fall down, but he continues. We have to reflect Krishna consciousness in the sense that we love a person, whether he's up or whether he's down, he always feels that he has a friend. And yes, if you feel that there's somebody there for you, that is the greatest strength that a person can have, that there's somebody in the background, that you have their support, and that there's somebody that you can turn to. It's a very wonderful feeling when you have that. Thank you. Anyone else would like to? Right, you have to wait for the mic. Yeah, you're coming. Oh, yeah.
It's a question about, you mentioned something about the state of the soul to be bliss, and how in the spiritual world we want it to be like Krishna, like feeling envy. Can we feel that in the spiritual world and then fall down here to the material world and continue our life because we want it to be like Krishna? It's possible to feel envy in the spiritual world.
Well, it's kind of an envy. It's envy in the sense, not the way we do in the material world. But it's more of it's kind of a curiosity envy. In other words, kind of, what is it like that? What is to have that? And the curiosity turns, the envy means I want something that you have. You've got a beautiful car, okay, you've got a Mercedes, I've got a Chevy, okay, what does it feel like to drive in a Mercedes? In other words, I want to have that car, so I envy you, and I don't like it that you have that car, because when you drive your car next to mine, nobody looks at me. This is what envy is, on a material level. But in the spiritual world, it's more of, Prabhupada does use the word envy, but we have to define it a little clearly, that it's a curiosity. What is it like? And that curiosity becomes a preoccupation. And that preoccupation, it becomes almost an obsession. Now, when we cannot live without finally tasting and feeling and experiencing what it's like to be served rather than to serve, we're no longer fit, no longer qualified for the spiritual world. We then need to come to a world where we can become a lord, and that's why we're here. Okay? Yes.
But why we want experience that? Because we experience already a very great bliss in serving Krishna. Okay, answer can be free will, but why we choose free will? Why we fall from this kind of consciousness? I actually never get real.
Why do we what?
Why will change this kind of bliss? Why will choose free will to want experience? I want to be like Krishna.
Why should we what?
To be like Krishna.
Why do we want to be
because
like Krishna?
Because we already have very special experience. Possibly fall down for this.
Because the living entity is naturally curious. Why is he curious? Because Krishna is curious. Krishna manifests his curiosity in a very pure way. He wants to know what Srimati Radharani is feeling for him. So he comes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's pure curiosity. Impure curiosity is, what does it feel like to be the Lord? And I leave my eternal service. My dharma is, I leave it. This should not. So what happens is that, of course, I'm sure Krishna, at least I have no doubt that the devotees in the spiritual world would try to encourage a person not to do that. Nonetheless, when it becomes an obsession, a preoccupation, you can't stop yourself.
But how is possible to happen that because he is full of bliss, knowledge and eternity?
I just told you. I just explained it.
Still.
I can only say the same thing again. That if you're experiencing peace and bliss, you want to know what it's like to be on the other side. What is it like to be the Lord? I'm a servant. I'm not getting adoration, profit. I don't own the world. What does it feel like to be an owner? What does it feel like to be loved by everybody? That's a curiosity. Are we ever curious about something? Now, this answer. Were you ever curious about something?
Yes.
And you needed to find an answer?
Yes.
And when you found the answer, what happened? You felt some satisfaction.
Yes.
Yeah. So, similarly, in the spiritual world, the same curiosity is there. And when this curiosity is not yet satisfied, one goes on until it is satisfied, and then there is some satisfaction. Unfortunately, that satisfaction is paid for at a very, very great price, which is called misery. Hare Krishna. I think we've gone over time. Thank you very much. The possibility is always there, but probability is not there. Possibility is it could, it could. But Krishna, what does Krishna say? Krishna says, for example, that supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or the moon or by fire or electricity. One who reaches it never returns to this material world. And there are several other verses in which he says this. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not upon leaving the body take his birth again in this material world, attains to my nature.
Yeah, no. But again, why does curiosity appear? Because you are full of this second Krishna.
Why does this curiosity appear? Why does Krishna have curiosity?
Yeah.